Rapid expansion?
We're ready.
Worker shortage?
We're good.
Anything can change the world of work.
A celebrity buys the company.
Depends on who it is. But relax, we've got ADP.
From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
From the Wall Street Journal, this is Instant Message. I'm David Pierce. This is a show about technology, how it's changing, what's going on, and what all of it actually means for your life. Since this is our very first episode, let me explain how the show is going to work. First, I'm going to bring in my colleagues Joanna Stern and Christopher Mims, who are actually listening to me right now, and we're going to talk about the biggest things on our minds. This week, well, it's phone season, and we're going to talk about which of the new devices from Apple, Google, Samsung, and everybody else are actually worth your money. And we're going to see if there's any truth to the idea that in a few years, your pizza and packages might be delivered by drones. Guess what? There's actually some truth to the idea. After that, Joanna has the first of our weekly upgrades, something quick and easy you can do to make your tech life better. Turns out she has weirdly strong feelings about iPhone charging. Lastly, we'll spend a few minutes digging a little deeper into a particular topic or person that matters right now in the tech world. This week, I talked to James Dyson. He's been making vacuums for decades, but now his company develops everything from hair dryers to electric cars. We talked about smart homes, what happens when every object you own is connected to the internet, and lots more. So stay tuned for that. Every week is going to be a little different on this show, but they're all going to be fun, I promise. Okay, ready? Let's get started. Joining me now, Joanna Stern in our New York studio and Christopher Mims over Skype from Baltimore. Hey, guys.
Hello, Christopher.
Hello, hello.
Are we podcasting?
Skype coming through. We're doing it.
Podcasting. That's the song I sing when we podcast.
You've been working on that song for months now. It's very exciting.
I mean, every time we've done the pilot of the show, I sing that song and I've perfected it.
Okay, so the first thing we need to talk about is that over the last, 6 weeks, it has just been a crazy onslaught of new phones. There's three new iPhones. There's two new Google Pixels. Samsung did some stuff. Something about foldable phones coming later this year. But it feels like now is the moment every year where we get to say, actually, there is some answer to, if you want a new phone, we know the answer. And Joanna, I want to start with you because you've spent all of this time using the iPhone and then trying to switch away from the iPhone and then using another new iPhone. And I feel like you have more clarity on this than anybody. So first of all, if people want to buy new iPhones this year, and lots of people always do, what iPhone should they buy? Is there a clear right answer at this point?
It's been so tiring, David. It's been so many phones. I sleep with the iPhone XR now as my pillow, but for many weeks I was using the XS. It's been tough times, but I think my answer, and I never say this as firmly as I mean, every year I have to answer this question, but this year I have a very firm answer, and it is to buy the iPhone XR. Some people call it the XR, but I call it the XR.
We can just agree that no matter what Apple calls it, the correct name is the XR.
Yeah.
And I don't care about anybody else.
Actually, fun fact, when I was tracking, doing the voiceover for my video, I had to write out the word 10 because every time I did the track, I kept saying XR. So 10R, XR is really XR is right, correct. So yeah, this
so
is the first
is
year I've said
the clear answer.
This is the right phone for everybody. Unless there's a couple of small little things that make the 10S or the XS excessive, as we're now calling it. There are a couple of reasons to go up, but I really don't think most people should. There's the lower end models that are still available, the old phones, the 7 and 8, which are good choices, but the 750 XR is just that Apple sweet spot.
So my thing with that has always been that my phone logic for years has been basically that you should upgrade only when you need to, and when you need to, you should buy the absolute best, most impressive, probably most expensive phone you can afford. The device you use the most often, it's the most important one, you're not going to upgrade all that often, so you might as well just spend as much money as you can and get the best thing. Why is that not good advice anymore? Or is that not good advice
right,
anymore?
Right, so what Apple did this year was they had the XS or the XS Max that they was sort of the upgrade from the X last year that everyone made a huge deal about, and Apple made a huge deal about, and when we reviewed it, we're actually really impressed with it and had all these new features. But guess what? It was $1,000, and that sounded like crazy for people to buy a phone. And this year, they introduced the XS, which kind of fills that bucket, and starts at $1,000. But now they have the XR, which starts at $750 and pretty much has almost the exact same features as the $1,000 phone. The places where they sacrifice or you make sacrifices are in the screen. It doesn't have an OLED screen and has an LCD screen. It doesn't have two cameras on the back. It only has one single camera. And really, that's the extent of the sacrifices. And so if you are obsessed with screens, if you're like complete screen snob and you're like, oh, my God, that screen looks disgusting, which never, ever happened because it's a really nice screen, then sure, you can get the XS. But if you just are used to having a really nice iPhone screen and a really good iPhone camera, this phone is the perfect phone for most people. I mean, honestly, everybody.
Yeah, I love the screen thing because it's like Apple spent all these years saying, we made a Retina display. It's so good. We couldn't possibly make it better. And even if we did, your eyes wouldn't notice the difference. And then they come in and they're like, well, okay, we made it better again. And now you have to spend lots of money to get the best screen. And it's like, no, you just said like 5 years ago that this is the best screen that your eyes can understand. And I kind of believe them and maybe we should have just stopped there.
Yeah, and like if you're looking at these phones side by side, then sure, but nobody's doing that.
Right.
So you
that's
look at this
real.
Phone and you're like, this is a beautiful LCD screen, $750. That's the entry level, right? But you can go up and it still pretty much hovers under $1,000. And to me, like actually what's happening is that Apple's marketing is sort of just working in a sense, right? Like last year they made us think, oh my God, we need to spend $1,000 for the best phone ever. And so people did that and we couldn't believe it and we justified it because it's got all this great technology and you're going to have it for 10 years. Now they're like, actually, here's a great phone. It's $750, which is $100 more than our average, the phone that they used to introduce, the iPhone 8 or iPhone 7 all started at $650. Like now it's at $750, but it's not $1,000. Isn't that amazing? And so the marketing is just working wonders and probably worked on me as well.
So the price thing is interesting to me. And Christopher, I wonder what you make of this, because you wrote a while ago about the idea that Apple's next phase is less about making all of its money from the iPhone and more about trying to get you to buy an iPhone so that you start to buy other things and be part of its services and things like that. And Apple is not a company you normally associate with charging less money for things over time. In fact, it's usually the exact opposite. Apple's pretty much clearly making its best phone $250 cheaper than last year. Is this a sign that they just want more people to buy it so that they'll also buy Apple Watches and AirPods?
Well, I mean, we'll see what people end up buying, right? Because not everybody's going to agree with us. Plenty of people are going to buy the XS or the XS Max. I mean, we don't know until we see their quarterly results whether the average selling of price of these phones could actually go up.
That's true. But even the existence of a phone that's good and this cheap seems unusual for Apple.
That's true. I mean, they are, as ever, pushing towards services revenue. And, you know, you do wonder at what point they're like, are we making enough? I mean, what are they going to do with this money, really? Return it to shareholders? There must be some point at which they're like, okay, people have a certain tech budget and we expect them to spend it on phone and headphones and watch and a variety of health monitors and all these subscriptions we're going to lock them into, and we have great margins on all this.
You know what they're going to spend it on? Cases. iPhone cases.
Cases.
They're going to definitely spend it on that.
Yeah.
But actually, to Chris's point, and that's like
against that.
What was really hard about this review is that it all, like, yes, they're great phones, and actually want to write a separate piece being like, this is just marketing. Like, we are falling for so much marketing. It's like marketing, I mean, it's not 101 because it seems more advanced, but like Christopher said, a lot of people won't listen to us, right? They'll go into the store and they'll buy the XS because guess what? Products that cost more must be better. They must be $250 better than the XR, right? And so Apple's kind of tricked us all. And that's why, like what I was saying in the review is this XR feels better than the $750. It's just as good for most people as that $1,000 phone.
Yeah. I mean, and it feels like in general, we're in this funny place where all phones really have reached a point where even if you notice the differences side by side, if you just buy one, you're going to like it. Like I reviewed the Google Pixel and it was a weird one to review because the Pixel 3 is an awesome phone with an awesome camera that I think in most cases is better than the iPhone or anything else that's out there. But there's all kinds of data now that says nobody switches. So if you're using Android, you're going to keep using Android. And if you're using an iPhone, you're going to keep using an iPhone. And even if you're using like a Samsung Android phone, you're probably going to stay there. So the idea that people are going to sort of jump around for the best new thing just doesn't seem to exist anymore. We're in this place where it's like, okay, I bought a $1,000 phone 2 years ago, or in this case, a year ago. It was great. Now I want a new one. My new phone probably costs $1,000. And it just like we're on rails with this stuff now where it's everybody kind of already knows what phone they're going to get next, which is a very strange phenomenon.
Right. And then you factor in like upgrade programs. I've heard from a lot of people who are in the Apple upgrade program saying, should I get the XR? Should I get the XS? I'm like, why would you get either of them if you have the 10 from last year? And so, again, the upgrade programs have become this really clever marketing scheme for people to always get the greatest and latest new phone by paying Apple a certain amount of money every month. And so yeah, you know, it goes back to that, like, you're not going to switch. You're going to keep upgrading within the same family of devices. What is really the benefit?
Yeah. So do either of you see, after this kind of new run of phones from Samsung and Google and Apple and everybody, is anything new here? Has anything changed? Or are we just kind of everybody's doing the same thing?
Did you see
Night
Mode on the Pixel that people were raving about?
Yes, but
just rolled out.
Christopher, can you tell us about what Night Mode
is? Tell us what that is.
You guys are the personal tech experts. It's just like...
Well, it just rolled out. We're sitting here podcasting. How would we know?
It's this super enhancement mode on low light pictures that makes them look like they were shot in normal light without adding a lot of grain. And it is a very googly thing, because it is not simply a matter of enhancing the image in like a typical way. There's some, you know, software wizardry here. You know, I mean, Google is really good at doing those like Adobe Photoshop type effects where, you know, you try to remove an object from an image automatically and then it guesses what would be behind there. So, you know, as others have said, at this point, a lot of the innovation that is meaningful, even on cameras, on phones, is in software.
Yeah. But that said, are you going to buy a Pixel 3?
I mean, he already has one. He just knows about this great new feature that came out.
That's true. Or maybe he just wishes it would show up on his iPhone.
I'm definitely not. And remember that Pixel is like, what is their market share? It's like 1% or less than 1%. I mean, I feel like Pixel is like a lot of stuff that Microsoft does and what Google has done in like Chrome OS. They make these flagship devices not so much because they plan on making money on them, but just to kind of whip everybody else into shape. It's a way of like wagging their finger at Samsung and being like, hey, you better roll those Android updates out faster because you've got some competition. They're just like shaming them into doing better. It's like how when Microsoft came out with the Surface tablet and it did so well, and then eventually HP and everybody else was like, hey, we better do equally good Windows machines. I feel like that's what it's really about ultimately.
I like it. One big piece of news this week was that Uber is looking to launch a giant fleet of delivery drones as soon as 2021, which sounds both far away and very soon all at the same time. We're going to get into what all of that means with the help of our reporter who had the scoop, our own Greg Benzinger. He's sitting out in the newsroom right now, so I'm going to go get him. I'll be right back.
What if he's not ready? What if he's eating lunch? What?
Yeah, knowing Greg, he's probably eating lunch right now.
Yeah, he probably was delivered by a drone. What do you think Greg's had for lunch? That's what we should have. We should have a question that we ask our listeners. Write in and tell us what you think Greg is having for lunch.
I have it on good authority that 100% of his meals are delivered on Amazon Prime now anyway.
What kind of food can you get on there?
He's just constantly dog fooding, as they say.
All right, Greg is coming.
I knew he wasn't ready.
This is why editing is a useful thing.
No, we're not going to edit. We did a whole bit on what Greg is eating for lunch that needs to be edited in.
Oh, boy. Can't wait to listen to it in the podcast. Greg Benzinger, thank you for coming to the podcast.
Happy to be here.
We need, as always, to understand what in the world Uber is doing because it's never, ever, ever clear. So you wrote this story this week about Uber and delivery drones. Can you explain what they're working on and what the news was this week?
Well, I came across this job posting. They're looking for some sort of executive to help them with drone delivery, specifically food drones that will bring you, presumably, prepared meals in a drone to your home instead of the cars that do it today for Uber Eats. It set out this sort of ambitious timetable of getting multiple markets with food delivery drones by 2021 and even operational food delivery drones next year. When I asked Uber about it, they quickly pulled the job posting down and said, you know, that wasn't supposed to be there. Makes a reporter like me think it was supposed to be there, and I just stumbled upon it. It had been on there a couple of days, and so it was clear that this was their ambition, and that's what they wanted to do.
So I've never totally understood why Uber Eats was something that Uber was all that interested in. Like, if pizza joints say anything, it's that delivery is not a place to make a ton of money. Like, why is delivery drone something Uber is after?
Well, it turns out they're doing really well with Uber Eats, growing really fast. This has turned out to be a big surprise for them. Uber has a sort of fleet of people already out in the roads using their app, and they're accustomed to driving for Uber. And so it's not a big switch for them to just say, well, it's a slow period, go pick up some food. The big problem for Uber and any other delivery company is the people.
Uber just hates humans. I feel like humans are Uber's problem.
One of the interesting things that came out in this trial, Uber was sued by Google. And one of the interesting things that came out is 70 to 80% of the cost of any ride is paid to the human. Uber would like to get rid of that. So if they can do it, that's great.
So Christopher, I want to know what you think about this too, because you wrote recently about how robots in general are changing the whole sort of e-commerce experience. But talked a bunch about drones, too. And I feel like when I think about drones, all I think about is, A, the idea of a million tiny things flying in the air seems really unpleasant, and B, like, holy Lord, the noise. So, like, how is this actually going to happen and work, or is it just one of those things that, you know, everybody says so they can raise more money in their IPO?
Well, it's definitely the second one always, but it doesn't mean that it won't ever work. Greg, are you sure that they were only talking about flying drones, by the way?
As opposed to submarines, or what other option are you referring to?
Well, there's the I'm sure you've seen the self-driving delivery robots from Starship Enterprises. I'm sure you've probably tripped over one of those in San Francisco. And then the larger, slightly larger ones, it's like one of them is the size of like a little schnauzer and one is the size of like a German shepherd from Neuro, the bigger ones that they're still testing.
I have seen those. There's like a human walking behind it with a joystick, making sure it
works. It's like a rolling suitcase.
DJI thinks that drone delivery is bullshit. So by the way, does Ocado, and they have the most sophisticated grocery delivery operation in the world, as far as I can tell. I think this is about as likely as Uber's flying car effort. How they're going to change regulations to make what are the odds that they're going to open up the airspace anytime soon to even do this is one big problem. Like this isn't like, oh, we're going to put drivers on the road in cars that are indistinguishable from other cars so that we can invade cities before regulators can come after us. Like you can't just, what are they going to do? Like, going to launch a fleet of unauthorized drones, or
I think they do want to get it to a point where it's regulated. They're going to find places where it is allowed, somewhere in Southeast Asia, or it's not clear yet where they might go. And I agree, there's a lot of concerns about these things flying over your head, people vandalizing them or shooting them out of the sky. Or
wasn't it 5 years ago that Jeff Bezos said it was going to be 5 years?
it was almost to the day. Yeah.
The funny part is, for me, like I like the idea personally. Like, I like the idea that I could be here and order something, and in 20 minutes a drone flies through the window. But I don't want anybody else to be able to do it. I don't want millions of them in the sky. I just want one for me, which I feel like is maybe not the best strategy. Joanna, what did you want to say?
I have a list of questions for Greg about his reporting that we don't necessarily have to use in the podcast, but I'm just wondering if he knows the answers to these. Is Uber working on something so my food won't get cold? So, like, presumably the food is in the air. We don't know how long. How do we ensure that the food isn't cold?
Or that it doesn't get warm, a chilled pasta salad, for example.
What about my gazpacho soup?
Yeah, it's a good question. I have no, I don't know anything about what kind of storage box they might use that's insulated.
But in theory, it's much faster, right? So it could actually, drone delivery would help that problem, not hurt it.
Theoretically, yeah. Domino's and Pizza Hut have really advanced space-age technology to keep your pizza warm.
That's actually true. I love it.
It is true. Well, you see, it's Mylar blankets in there. Yeah. NASA came up with those.
Next question is, how will it confirm that I've picked up my food? Like it just randomly drops the food on my front stoop and then what?
I feel like you got to ask the person who takes this job that Uber pulled off.
And they have a big issue.
And drone delivery companies do have an answer for this one, because I've pushed them on the same point. And their answer is simply that we're used to UPS dropping things off on the front stoop because we don't know when UPS is going to show up. If you know to the second when a drone is going to be on your front stoop, it's the same thing as when your Uber arrives. You get a push alert on your phone, you walk outside, and presumably it's not like putting it in your hands, but you get it right then.
Mm-hmm. Then last question is, how do we ensure the drones don't eat our food?
You have to program them not to be sentient. That's really up to the programmers.
Okay. It's fine reporting.
Awesome. We got to move on. But Greg, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Greg should be on the podcast every week.
I agree.
Sold. So my interview with James Dyson is coming up. But before we get to that, Joanna, I want you to tell everybody the tip you have for this week, which seems like the thing you liked the least about the iPhone XR, XR, and also the only thing you've talked to me about for like 2 months now. So tell people how you feel about charging their iPhones.
How long do I have for this segment? Forever?
6.5 hours. Is that enough time?
Yes. Then I'm going to start with, I want everyone to set the scene, okay? You've just gotten this brand new iPhone. Maybe you spent $1,000 on it, which is probably not the best idea. Maybe you've spent $750 on it. You're unboxing it. It smells beautiful. Actually, Apple products don't smell amazing, but that's for another podcast. You're taking the plastic off the screen. You've got a new Apple sticker, which don't know what most people do with those. You're so excited about your new phone, and then you see the sad charger that comes with it. It's a 5-watt charger. It's the same charger we've been getting with iPhones since the original iPhone. It is the slowest charger in the history of the world. Actually, I'm not sure about that. Fact checkers can check that. And so you plug in your iPhone to charge, and it takes forever. This is not a good use of our times. This is not a good use of our money. And so I suggest that everyone who's listening to this, if you have an iPad, you use your iPad charger, because your iPad charger is 12 watts. That's, I can't do math, 7 watts more, my producer just told me, 7 watts more than what comes in the box, and it will charge twice as fast. If you don't have an iPad charger, you should buy a cheaper charger online. I am a very big fan of Anker. They make great charging accessories. They do not pay me, but I do love their products. $15 for the PowerPort 2 that has two USB ports on it. Also, 24-watt charger will also charge twice as fast as the charger in the box. And so, yes, I know, and Apple claims this. Apple says, it doesn't matter. People charge overnight, right? The battery lasts them through the whole day, and then they charge with the 5-watt charger overnight. I don't think that's true. I don't think most people get through the day with their battery, especially not on travel-heavy days or days where you forgot to charge overnight or who knows. Lots of different people out there, different scenarios. But when you charge, you want to get as much juice as fast. And like I always, every time I give this tip, people ask, well, that's not good for the health of the battery. That's also not true. With new lithium-ion batteries, you can't overcharge. You can't charge too fast. This is all built into the technology of the charger and the phone.
All right.
How many hours do I have left?
That was the full 6.5. You did an amazing job.
A conspiracy theory? Like, why do we think that they give awful chargers because they thought their wireless charger would be out by now? Same thing as with headphones. They're like, here's some cruddy wired headphones, please buy the AirPods.
Possibly. I mean, I think possibly too, they just haven't thought about it. And they're like, if people want to charge faster, they'll buy the more expensive fast charger that we sell for $40. I mean, Apple makes a lot of money on accessories.
They sell a fast charger for $40.
Even more if you go with the USB-C charger, plus you have to buy the USB-C cord, lightning cord. So yeah.
Crazy.
All right, we can argue about this every week on this podcast for as long as we have it, I promise. But for now, thank you both for being here. And coming up next is my interview with Dyson CEO and vacuum mogul James Dyson about the connected future of pretty much everything.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. oracle.com/wallstreet.
You probably know Dyson, which has been making these super fancy, super high-tech vacuum cleaners for decades. But more recently, the company's branched out into things like hair dryers and fans and is now devoting a huge amount of resources to electric cars. Meanwhile, its most recent product, the Airwrap, is billed as a safer and better way to style your hair for $500. I'm pretty sure Joanna has one and likes it a lot. Anyway, it's this weird, large mix of things. So I wanted to know what makes James Dyson, the founder and inventor at the top of the company, tick. He's worth billions of dollars. He has a sir in front of his name, and he could do anything he wants. So why vacuums in cars and not augmented reality or biotech or cryptocurrency?
Actually, when we start developing pieces of technology, we always have at least one use for it. Mm. So at the moment, with our battery vacuum cleaners, you know, we make 20 million of those a year. We consume about 120 million 18650 battery cells.
Wow.
We're a huge user of batteries. We have two factories permanently dedicated to it. So deciding to develop a new battery for our vacuum cleaners was enough.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've been having a battle with diesel and vehicle pollution for many years. During the 90s, we developed something to collect diesel exhaust pollution because it's very nasty particulate of NOx and SOx, and it's not a good thing to breathe in, and
right.
Bad for your lungs as well as your heart. And when we approached the trucking industry with this invention in the 90s, they said, oh, we don't want to take that because, A, it's expensive, and B, we have to have the problem of disposing of the black soot, the carbonaceous soot, in brackets. It's better for people to breathe it in than to give us the problem of having to dispose of it. And again, the vehicle manufacturer, car manufacturers weren't interested either, so we had to drop that project. But I've had this sort of hate of vehicle pollution ever since for the last 15 or 20 years. So when we started developing a battery and getting really quite close to having a solid state solution, we're also in electric motors. We do a lot of purifiers, we do heaters and coolers. So an electric car is batteries, electric motors, heating and cooling, getting rid of pollution.
And a lot of airflow.
Exactly, a lot of airflow. So it just seemed, right, let's do a car. Mm-hmm. I'm not a petrol head. It's just that we've got all the pieces of technology that are part of a jigsaw of a new, the future of cars.
My sense is there are fewer players working on sort of reinventing hairstyling products. But right now, everyone is, and that's not to denigrate hairstyling products, but right now sort of the big next thing is kind of what comes next after the cars that we have now, and there's self-driving cars and there's electric cars and everything is about to be different and everyone is on it. And is this the wildest market you've thrown your hat into?
Well,
so
yeah, far? Yeah. So of course it is. It's of course a very big market, so there's room for quite a few players, but it hasn't half consolidated, so there aren't that many players. Mm-hmm. But I think as electric car demands a very different chassis, a very different type of vehicle. So I think it's a good time for someone who hasn't got all the history and hasn't got huge factories producing internal combustion engines. So it's a good time for a new player to jump in. It has to be the future. Mm. We have to do a better battery because at the moment you have to put in 8 or 10,000 cells for one car of something that is highly flammable. The one that was crashed in Switzerland for the television, the Top Gear television program, mm-hmm. is still burning.
Wow.
Four months later, a new cell catches alight. So there are lots of problems there that we've got to solve, but I think there's a big prize there, and the prize is clean cities, healthier people, and a quieter life in streets.
And that does seem to be one of those things where it is obvious that that's where we end up. Yeah. How we get there is slightly less clear, at least,
Well, that's
the
fun of it. That's the fun of it, because that's where the invention can occur.
Yeah.
And, we must make quiet tires. Tires are quite noisy. Mm. We must make quieter tires, quieter roads for that matter, but that's another problem.
That's
not going to solve that one.
Right. Fair enough. So, and the other part of that, I think, is speaking of, things that seem like obviously where we're going, but it's less clear how we're going to get there. I've read you talking about the smart home a little bit over the last couple of years, and I think the rest of the tech industry seems to be sort of slowly catching up to what you've been talking about for a long time, which is that maybe we can apply technology to these things that are not necessarily considered, quote unquote, gadgets and make them better. And we've arrived at this idea that, everything is going to be connected and everything is going to be smart. And yet it all seems like chaos that hasn't yet worked for real people. Like, do you have a smart home?
No. Okay. No, I live in a very old home because you're not really allowed to build new homes in England. No, there's nothing smart about it at all. But I think you get these buzzwords and then people assume things. But I think what's sort of more interesting, I think things should be connected. There's no doubt about that. And they are. I mean, we produce lots of connected products. That's all great and very interesting. I'm perhaps rather wanting to go beyond that. I'm more interested in artificial intelligence and products doing the right thing at the right time for you as you are at the moment. So in other words, if you walk into a room, of course the lights will go on, but it'll sense your health, how hot you are, whether you're perspiring or whether you're shivering, and do all the right things for you. I mean, already our purifiers sense the pollution in the room and switch on and deal with it. And they'll tell your smartphone what they're doing and what the pollution was and what level it was. But also we actually display it on the product now, because I've got this theory that people don't necessarily want to go and jump into apps all the time to see what's going on.
Agreed.
So I'm going, if you like, the stage beyond, where you might glance at the product because to see if there's been any pollution. So it's important that our product knows it and deals with it. Mm. And you don't even need to know about it, because our lives are going to get so complicated, the products are going to be so capable and have so many features that we can't possibly control them,
right,
even if we knew the extent of what they did. I'm not sure that people want an awful lot of dials. It's our job to put something, a genuine piece of technology in front of people that, that obviously does the job properly so that they can understand what it is we're trying to say. So I'm really rather more interested in things happening automatically and doing the right things automatically and telling you whether you're well or unwell, whether you're about to have a heart attack, all this kind of thing. I think, you know, if products can do all that type of thing, then it's going to make our lives much easier.
Do you have a sense of how possible that is? Or, and I mean, how, I guess, how long
possible.
It'll take us to get there? That seems like such a lovely idea that's so far off from my actual
happening.
Experience.
It's happening now. I mean, we, you know, we're part of the way mm-hmm. there now. And, you know, cheap cameras and cheap sensing technology. Sensing technology, I think, is one of the most interesting things of the future. Mm. Pretty crude at the moment, but interesting new sensors that are very cheap are coming out. I think we're nearly there.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
And that's our show. Thanks to James Dyson, Greg Benzinger, Joanna Stern, and Christopher Mims for being here. And thank you for listening. We're going to be doing this weekly on Fridays, so make sure you subscribe to Instant Message on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Send us feedback and ideas at personaltech@wsj.com, too. We'll talk to you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day, but what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/washingtonwise.